bit, and I'm glad that many of the colleagues have arrived meanwhile. Just planning this conference, as we announced it as part of the project Estonian Music History, I thought that to avoid questions, what are you doing, how do you plan it, when it will be ready, I'll start the conference just with introducing the project. The project in Estonian, Eesti muusikalugu, can be translated in both ways, Estonian Music History or History of Music in Estonia. And that is financed by the Estonian Ministry of Education and Research for 5 years, and it has to be completed in 2013. I think our most optimistic prognosis is that in the end of the next year we have something ready for editing, something in draft and some parts in work. But anyways, we try to do our best. This year, the funding of the project was €5,700. And I think that many of us, of you who have applied for projects, smaller or larger, know quite well how large or small money is €5,000 and how much work you can get for it. So that's certainly, we cannot get Estonian music history, not a small one, not an academic one, for this money. There are some other projects indirectly supporting it, and also a great intellectual motivation of our team to work. The project group includes me, Thomas Siitan, Kristel Pappel, and Anu Kõlar as main participants. Anu Veenre is a project assistant, and there are all our music history doctoral students who are at present working on historical topics included, and also many master theses and smaller research papers of all our department. Well, certainly you must start from a question, and that was also our very first question. Estonian music history. What is Estonia and what is Estonian? As a toponym or geographical name, Estonia is old, but it's very vague what it meant in the history. Actually, the official term for the territory that present day is Estonia is Old Livonia. Then, from the 18th to the 19th centuries, from the actually 17th to the 19th centuries, there were Estonian and Livonian provinces. And the first time when Estonia meant this contemporary territory was 1917. And another question arises, what to do with St. Petersburg? Because as I brought out here, a considerable number, actually the largest urban population of Estonians lived and worked in St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg was connected with railways to Tallinn and Tartu, and it didn't take more time to travel from St. Petersburg to either of these Estonian towns than it took to travel from Tartu to Tallinn. So people living there were not isolated from Estonia, and that was a very active center of Estonian national movement. To illustrate the same things on map. That's a map of the 17th century, when Estonia belonged to the great Swedish Great Kingdom. And contemporary Estonia is here. There are no borders. The same country is including future St. Petersburg areas around it. Baltic Sea is a Swedish inner sea. And the local centers were Stockholm, Åbo, Viipuri, Narva, Tallinn, Reval at that time, Tartu or Dorpat, Riga, then further we go to Liepaja, Liipavi, Meemel or Klaipeda, and soon there comes Königsberg and other important centers of the Baltic Sea. And people moved around, particularly musicians, educated people, merchants. They didn't live in one city for all of their life, but they searched for better positions and better conditions for their living and work. So when we study musical life in future Estonian centers, actually we cannot cut it off of all these connections, and much what was going on here continued in some larger centers or was related to larger centers. Now we come closer to the future center of this area, St. Petersburg. That's a Swedish map of the mid-18th century, when actually all those approximately the borderline between Swedish Kingdom and Russia moved around in this Karelian area. But from that time on, St. Petersburg began to grow and to tempt musicians to provide wonderful possibilities of earning money for example, Richard Wagner or Ferenc Liszt, and that all passed Estonia and is part of Estonian musical life. And inside this area, you see a stronger border here, actually separating Northern Estonia or Estonian province and Livonia, including South Estonia and North Latvia. And again, musical roots around this, through this era, started from Riga, then traveling musicians stopped somewhere in Vunnu or Tsesis or Venden, then in some manor of Southern Estonia, where they spent time and played music. Then they stopped for a week or a few in Tartu or Dorpat at that time. Then a common stop was in Dorma, then in some manner of Eastern Estonia, and continuing to Narva and St. Petersburg. And again, there were no borders in this era. But here we can see quite a strong border, and that's actually one of the last maps printed in Soviet Estonia in 1989. That's the European or the western part of the Soviet Union seen from the perspective of Moscow as a center, and there is a very strong violet line where all the colored world ends. And that's the border of the Soviet Union, or the Iron Curtain. So actually, that's a comparatively recent phenomenon, though also quite an important phenomenon. So, what is asthumia? We must answer, that's all of that. And Estonian music history has something to do with all of that. Again, and further, who are Estonians? Estonians, for many, many centuries, were people who lived in northern Estonia or in the province of Estonia. When somebody was called Estonian in Paris, it usually meant some manor owner, a rich person, a citizen of some North Estonian town. Southern Estonians were called Livonians. So Estonian formally was a citizen, somebody whose roots or who came from Northern Estonia. The other possible meaning of the word Estonian, though that was less used, that was peasants speaking various dialects of Estonian language. But mostly themselves, they called them maakeel või maainimesed, that is peasants, actually. And very often they were referred to Undeutsch. And this term Undeutsch means not just a person who cannot speak German. For example, a French was never referred to as Undeutsch, but that meant a person of lower social layer, uneducated person, and he also, he or she could speak German. That didn't save him being Undeutsch. Well, and Estonian-speaking middle class, with its own social and cultural life, developed in the late 19th century. And just speaking Estonian and creating the more educated registers of the language and developing the language for using it in education, in science, in medicine, that developed slowly and began in the middle of the 19th century. So in the contemporary sense, Estonian is quite a recent term, but certainly when speaking about Estonians, I think in music history we have to study music of all those people who lived there, because those societies, Estonian societies, wouldn't have been possible without all other societies mostly speaking German, almost exclusively speaking German, because the influence of Russia was very small. Now, the next question when you are planning to write such a comprehensive music history is, what is the subject of music history? A traditional subject of a music history, or at least beginning from Guido Adler, the subject is musical works, masterpieces, styles. That means after analyzing masterpieces, you do some generalizations and then speak and group them into styles. Then composers and their life. Well, according to this view, really some Finnish scholars who in the 1920s or 30s wrote that first, before you can write Finnish music history, you must write Finnish music. According to this view, the really music history in Estonia started in the 20th century, because we have very few scores, not to speak about masterpieces, from earlier than 19th century, and even from the 19th century we have mostly amateur music as scores. And if you take the tools of style analysis and apply them to amateur choral music, the result is ridiculous. And that has been done in Estonian music history writing of the first half of the 19th century. That created much irritation, because really you cannot analyze small choral pieces as if they were symphonies of Beethoven. Then, after 1960s and 70s, Karl Dahlhaus's three columns, or Karl Dahlhaus's idea of structural music history, included ideas and musical life to the works, and certainly expanded the idea of music, the subject of music history. But his music history still is centered around masterpieces and classical music. And amateur music has not very honorable place. Well, for a German, having Brahms and Beethoven and Wagner, that's not to wonder about. Then in the end of the 20th century came various postmodern expansions or additions of new musicology and other musicologies, and marginal groups, their musics, their views to the music history became also important, and different value systems were taken more as equal or more as relational in any respect. Well, how we define this problem for our future music history? First of all, to begin our music history from earlier centuries, we have to concentrate on all kinds of music and include most different social groups. But we can study things that are reflected and can be studied using historical sources. Certainly another question is, what are the sources of music history? I would say that everything written or recorded, direct and indirect score recordings in addition to scores, certainly are sources of music history. But a very strong expectation is that in smaller and marginal countries, folklore is taken as music of lower layers of all earlier centuries. But we want to stress that our present-day knowledge of folk music can't be projected far back into the history. We may say that some song traditions are really very old, but we don't know anything about them before the middle of the 19th century. So folklore comes into our music history in the end of the 19th century, together with the ideas of nationalism and folklore collecting. With every history, you have to decide the problems of periodization, and that is the rough periodization we have worked out. Certainly, there are political dates that, in broad lines, define this periodization. And as our music history is not style-centered, but music life-centered, then political events changing the society certainly are very important dates. But looking at this periodization, I think it's normal to ask whether what is closer seems larger, or the history accelerates. And that is the problem with most histories. When you read in one volume Estonian history, then also unproportionally large part is dedicated to the last two centuries, or even to the last century. So probably that's normal that we have more sources and closer events seem more important. But another serious reason to dedicate more time and attention to the last periods is that if we wrote such a music history where, for example, Arvo Pärt or Veljo Tormis are only in the very end of the story and don't take an important part of it, our readers won't understand us. And even abroad, a normal question of you, or for an Estonian musicologist, is that when in Estonia, I don't have the feeling that Arvo Pärt is as important as he is abroad. And that certainly is true. In Estonia, he's certainly not the only Estonian composer worth mentioning. And certainly the reason to dedicate more attention to the 20th century is that from this time we really have important scores and we can write also style analysis. Well, we have worked out our contents. Before writing, we have the contents. And that's the beginning. So everything before the 16th century is introduction. And the reason is that there are very little sources. There are certainly data about and investigations of medieval institutions, but not of music. And the sources, partly they have been destroyed, partly they are in different archives, mostly in Stockholm, and no one has studied them. But with the rise of Protestant church and Protestant music, we have enormously more data about musical life and musical institutions. So that's the reason why really we can observe musical life. We know music that was played in Estonian towns in the Swedish time and later. Now, we try not to write several parallel histories or parallel communities, but to some extent we do it in the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, because really the music at that time was not a state thing, not a state-supported thing, but that was supported by societies. And societies during those decades were strictly separate along national lines. That is, Estonians were often members of German societies, educated Estonians, but not vice versa. And I brought one example of a later chapter, of chapter 8, Modernization of Music in Soviet Estonia, as an example how we try to continue this synthetic view of binding together different musics, different layers, musics of different social groups, and to continue it also into the 20th century, and not to leave out jazz movement and rock movement, maybe not giving them equal space as compared with some other eras, but not to leave them out and not to show them as something very separate of what was going on. And finally, some concepts and questions, how and whether to use them at all in music history. Well, I think that a music history without a concept of style would be very unusual. But it would be artificial to speak about Renaissance music or Baroque music here. when really you do not know music that was composed here, but only music that was performed here, or only musical institutions. So we think that the concept of style is closely related to compositions with strong aesthetic ambition, so that it would be proper to apply it to the music of the 20th century, when there really were composers who thought themselves also, who reflected about themselves with historicist categories. For example, for a young composer who was studying together with me in early 1970s, that was quite normal to speak about himself in the age of 20 or 23. My first period, the time when I was interested in neoclassic things, or at the time when I was interested in serial music. So somehow in his own thoughts, he was already placing himself into the music history. And that is very normal, actually, in the 20th century. Some composers say doubt, some don't. But many of them think themselves, together with the concepts of style, of inventing maybe a new style, and so on. So that will come in, but only in the 20th century. And the last thing that we try to include is analyzing performance as an independent art, and to turn attention also to the performer's contribution to music. And in this way, for example, some important performances of, example, Bach, passions, or important classical works are really important for the local music history, though the pieces themselves, the compositions, don't belong to our music history. And our earlier project, and the result of it, you see here on the table, a large collection, Estonian sound recordings in 1939, that really gave us a basis to, at least at, in some extent, to include analysis of performance into the observations, at least since 1930s, maybe not earlier, because recordings were too short and too rare earlier. And we've had some master theses and even doctoral theses developing tools for analyzing performance, so that's not impossible to include this point of view also to the music history. Well, and now I must confess that if maybe in the next 5 or 6 or 7 years you will really keep in hands the book I've now dreamed about, well, that will be wonderful. But without dreaming, nothing would happen. Thank you.
Thank you for this introduction. This is not only introduction to this project, but to our conference. There are many questions to discuss through several days. I think we could take some short time for comments and questions.
I really appreciated the sensitivity at the beginning of this when you were talking about the fluid boundaries and the difficulty of kind of drawing a line around Estonia. Yes, I mean, there is still the paradox that you're writing an Estonian history and the Norwegians are writing a multi-volume Norwegian history, and maybe the Latvians are doing the same, etc. So in a way, it's very hard to get away from this kind of thing. And part of me hankers after the idea that we might manage to denationalize rather than nationalize music history, actually. I just wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, actually, I think that when our project was financed, most people who gave their money for it dreamed to have a national history. But if the book will be interesting, I think they will forgive us. But certainly the result may be disappointing to a number of composers whom I know already. Well, but the alternative would be to write a book only about the 20th century.
No, I mean, the alternative would be to write a book about Estonian history in the 20th century, but to write a rather different kind of book about the 18th and 19th century.
But at present, we'd really, because all Estonian music stories and earlier books, there are very few of them, they begin from the mid-19th century when Estonian choruses began to sing secular music. And actually, our goal is more to bring in earlier centuries and less to concentrate on the 20th.
Thank you. Some more questions?
This is not very reflective, but I just wanted to speak up on the notion of style, because it might be interesting for you to know that I working on Finnish music, so I think this interest in musical styles in the 20th century, so in the early decades of the 20th century, it's not an obvious piece of interest. And for instance, I noticed that I wrote this article on Finnish composers' reactions to the early French classicism of the 20th century. So I noticed that there was this traditional way of thinking that came from Wegelius, his book on the history of Western music, that Nordic peoples, that they were romantic, romantic in the music. So I don't know how far this comes, but I made some observations how this idea might have come up in Finnish composers' thinking. But for instance, in Klamis' ideas and also Bangu's ideas was a little bit older than Klamis. So it's really interesting in style. There is interest in French composers, German composers, but really not really in terms of style. So I think it's really quite interesting. And so Matti Huttunen thought that it was Sulho Ranta who first started to promote these ideas, basing on the style idea as a style history of Adler. So maybe in the
1920s. So. Well, here that was one student of Guido Adler, Elmar Arro, who wrote a book entitled Geschichte der Musik, Estnische Musik. And he, as a student of Guido Adler, analyzed all the simple choral songs in the way the harmony and style and form and so on, and that caused great irritation. But quite different is the concept of national style, because when I spoke about styles here, I meant just the approach to the constructing music history based on the styles like classicism and romanticism and neoclassicism and so on, but not the ideas about national style. Because actually, that was the idea, larger idea of national culture, and not so specifically of the history of music or development of music.
Well, what I meant was that I think that there was more interest in sort of the idea of the contents of the music, more than interest in writing music as a written. like individuality, yeah, is expression, such things, but not really, I mean, the music of texture seems to have been.
Well, I think that the things I just presently know are in a very broad scale, but those ideas come into the discussion when you really take the people active and ideas of some specific time. Style is anyway so very vague, and we can't spend really a whole conference and not come together to definition.
And this reaction to Adler's style history, what was that? From what time does it say?
Arab, that was 1930.